Good evening, everyone, and welcome to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. This is your host, Lance White, also known as the Zany Mystic. Tonight's guest is Dennis McMahon. Dennis is a writer, editor, and attorney living in Brooklyn, New York. After experiencing what he would later describe as spontaneous mystical events, Dennis became deeply involved in seeking explanations through shamanism, past life regressions, communications with the dead, and the like. Part of his process is to share what he has perceived and learned, reflecting the tradition of sharing practiced for thousands of years among members of indigenous societies who recognize that the sharing of mystical experiences benefits the human condition. Dennis has also authored the underground novel Street Fighting Man under the pen name of Dennis Jones. As one reviewer put it, the mystical power of rock and roll and its capacity to heal the damaged spirit comes alive in Street Fighting Man, the debut novel by Dennis Jones. So let's welcome this multifaceted person to the show now, named Dennis, and learn more about this. Hi, Dennis. How are you?
Okay, Lance. Thanks for having me.
Now, your book kind of borders on the paranormal in that you meet your son Ryan, who died as an infant 15 years after his death. Would you want to tell us about that?
Sure. My son Ryan was, as you say, 2 weeks old when he passed away, essentially as a result of medical malpractice. At the time, my grief was overwhelming, and I wasn't able to visit his grave even, and I had never done so until 15 years later when, synchronistically, my godmother died, and I went to her funeral, which was being held in the same graveyard, which is a place called Calvary out on Long Island here. Mm-hmm. And Ryan was also buried there. So while I was attending my godmother's funeral, I distinctly felt someone or something basically calling me to his grave. I don't know how better to express that. I didn't go that day, but returned a week later, one foggy morning at sunrise. It was like out of a Stephen King novel, quite emotional for me. And while I was at Ryan's grave, I had a very clear vision of him appearing to me out of the cosmos, looking to be the teenager he would have been had he survived his ordeal on Earth. He asked me, "What's the matter, Dad?" And I cried out, "I'm sorry, I never visited your grave before." And he goes, "That's all right, Dad, that's all right." And with that, I felt a true forgiveness. And at the time all this was going on, it all felt so very natural. But later my logical side kicked in, and I began questioning my own sanity, to tell you the truth. So I started doing some research and read in a book by medium Suzanne Northrup called The Seance, that children who cross over continue to grow up on the other side, which resonated very strongly with me because it was exactly what I had experienced in my vision of Ryan, and that resonance led me to delve deeper, and I've been researching mysticism and the paranormal ever since.
Wonderful. In a sense, your spiritual journey began with the vision of Ryan, but did you have any experiences as a child as well that would lead you to believe that you might be different?
Actually, I did, but I didn't recognize them as such, and part of the book gets into this. I think if we look back on our own childhood, we may be able to recognize certain situations that happened. One that I write about in the book was very strange. It was I was 3.5 years old, and my brother Barney was born about a week or so before that, and he was coming home for the first day. Mm. And we were sitting in the kitchen at this long table, and all family members around, and I'm sitting across from my mother, like, diagonally on the table, and hot coffee is being poured, boiling hot coffee right off the stove. Mm. And it looked like to me at the time that my mother was signaling me to pour the coffee on my chest. And, you know, I said, "Oh, all right." And I looked around to see if anybody was watching, and nobody seemed to be except her. And I took and I did that, and it scalded me. And I started ripping my T-shirt off, and the flesh was coming with it. People started going crazy. I ended up in the hospital. The next thing I know, I'm home in bandages. It was just like, I remembered it, but it was so strange to me, and I never really talked about it to anyone. And when I started this journey, after Ryan had passed away, I came to do some past life regressions on some other issues, and I did a past life regression to that moment, and with my teacher at the time, who I identify as Dawn in the book, and I'm reliving that experience in a very clear vision, and what I'm seeing is not my mother signaling me to do this. What mother would do that? I mean, really.
Right, right.
But it was just this angelic presence, like transposed over her, and I'm telling this to Dawn, and Dawn says, well, ask her why.
Yeah.
So I asked her why, and she said, well, you brought it on yourself, and this is so you will never be envious or jealous of your brother again in this life. And my brother is a very charismatic person, and I never really have ever felt any jealousy towards him. So it was that kind of some sort of barbaric ritual. I don't know. It seemed rooted in ancient times or something. But at the time it was going on, I really had no idea that it was a spiritual event. It was just that the events as seemed superficially. I saw the coffee, I poured it on myself, and got scalded.
Wow, that's fascinating. You know, a lot of people have, a great majority of people have recounted stories about angelic presences and things that are very similar to yours. So it's finally we're starting to look into this and see that it's very real and that it's not necessary to keep all of that pent up inside of us.
Yeah, that's what I try to get across in the book, Lance. You expressed it very well. I found that, once I did start opening up with these experiences, people say, well, yeah, you know what happened to me, and they tell me their story.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You could almost put together a book based on all the stories that other people have.
That's quite true.
Some people have done that. Do you remember, in your past life regressions, do you remember any of those experiences and some of the lives that you lived during those times?
Well, another thing that happened to me when I was a kid, and again, I didn't think of it at the moment as a spiritual experience, but I was about 5 years old, and I'm going through a shoebox filled with family photos, and I come across this picture of a soldier, and I said, that's me. That's me. Now, the soldier happened to be my mother's first husband, who died in World War II, and also the half-brother of my father. So I had developed later on in life a claustrophobic condition that I couldn't get rid of no matter how many therapists I went to. So I came to the idea that perhaps because of the way my uncle, his name was Buster, died in a claustrophobic setting in a plane going down over Japan, shot down.
No.
Maybe that to carry over to this life. So I did a past life regression to that event, again with Dawn. I described this in the book. And it was one of the first things I did with her. It was also very vivid. It was intense. And I went through the experience of being shot down, but my guides would not let me experience the death moment.
Oh.
I kind of like, I was alive and then I was dead. I never really went through any transition.
Oh.
And I did two experiences that way, and they never let me see that. But the message I got was that I hadn't gotten the claustrophobia from that condition, and when I did the experience, I perceived no claustrophobia in this person.
Oh.
He was just a man who loved flying.
So
what came to me later, though, was that the claustrophobic condition was a carryover of another life.
Okay.
At the time of Jesus, and I was a messiah of sorts, was how it was put to me, and that I had misled someone when I preached to them knowingly, and they were hurt by that. I think I was teaching something about loneliness, and it was perfectly okay to be alone. While that was true for some people, it wasn't true for everyone, but they took it as absolutely true and got hurt by that.
Uh-huh.
And as a result, on myself, I cast this claustrophobia, and I had worked it out. it was gone. I mean, as a kid, I was never claustrophobic, but in this life, I'm a 60 survivor, I guess you'd say. I did some experimenting with drugs, and I got thrown into jail when I was wigged out on an acid trip in this kind of solitary confinement situation, and I came out of that with this claustrophobic condition. But
That's easy to do. I've had a couple of experiences that are not too unlike what you just described. I mean, just a horrible, horrible bad trip where I had taken the LSD, and I got a phone call from the nursing home, and my mother's best friend, who was living with us, had just died. So that kind of put a bummer on the evening's entertainment.
Yeah.
But
so you could say, I mean, from a psychological perspective, that's where I got it. But
yeah,
from a
yeah.
spirituality perspective, that's not where I got it, but it reignited it.
Yeah.
You know, it was really, because why I was thinking it didn't come from there is because they were saying in those days, anyway, when I was researching this, that if you know where your fear is coming from, then that's half the battle and you can get rid of it. You just tell yourself this is not that situation, but it wasn't that easy for me. So I had to get on the spiritual track, and once I got on that, I started to be able to manage the claustrophobia better, and that's one of the practical aspects of engaging in the spiritual life, is that you can fight your everyday problems from a spiritual perspective as well as a psychological and physical perspective and make some progress.
Yeah. In fact, in your book, you mentioned how important it is to overcome fear. And do you want to elaborate a little bit on why that's so important?
Well, I think that's part of the journey here on planet Earth.
Well, for sure.
You know, this is especially in today's world. I mean, it's a world run by fear. And, you know, if we could recognize that and deal with that, I think we would not be doing a lot of the things that we are doing as people, as a country, and we would be able to have a better place to live.
Oh, absolutely. And it seems that a lot of this fear is intentionally created because it removes us from our ability to remain balanced and centered and make choices from a spiritual perspective or from our true selves, and more of an instinctive self kicks in.
Yeah.
So
very true.
Now, in your research, you did you discover any statistics about what most Americans believe in the paranormal and the soul?
Yeah, a 2005 Gallup poll I dug up showed that 73% of Americans believe in the paranormal. To me, that was a very high number.
Mm.
And in that poll, Gallup designated as paranormal certain beliefs like clairvoyance, communication with the dead, reincarnation, because these require the belief that humans have more than the normal five senses of sight, hearing, touch, smell, and taste.
Mm-hmm.
And then according to a 2005 Newsweek poll, all mainstream polls here, 80 to 85% of Americans believe in the soul and its continued life after death.
And well, that's quite a few people.
Absolutely.
Now, when you started your journey, which apparently began it starts at the beginning of time, but when you officially started it, when you saw Ryan 15 years after he had passed,
That would have been around 1996.
1996. So you've been on this path for
about 12 years, I guess. Doing the math quickly, 11 and a half, maybe.
Yeah, okay. What were some of the books and journeys that inspired you along the way? What directions did you go into to seek the spiritual realms?
Well, I first went to Dawn I first read The Seance by Suzanne Northrop, and I started getting interested in communications with the dead. And then I went, after that, to Dawn, and trying to work on my own situations personally. And she encouraged me to get into shamanism.
Oh, okay.
And that has been a big one for me. That really resonated very well for me. And for your listeners who don't know what shamanism is an ancient spiritual practice that predates all of the organized religions and now being practiced on Earth. I think the rock god would put it at 35,000, not 3,500, but 35,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And in indigenous societies, a shaman is the member of the tribe who can enter into that expanded state of awareness and journey to the spirit world on behalf of others to help them with health issues or resolve practical problems, things like that. Mm-hmm. And what shamanists believe is that, and I think I've been to your site, Lance, and I think you're in sync with this, I don't know if you're into shamanism at all, but that there are benevolent helping spirits, including, I would add, saints and guardian angels,
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
who are standing by ready to help each of us.
Oh,
but
yeah.
The protocol is for us to ask, and by doing shamanic journey work, we can invite these helping spirits into our lives and ask them to help us resolve health, love, career, and other personal issues.
Absolutely. In fact, there's a kind of a revival of interest in shamanism, and especially the aspect of it that involves the ritual of ayahuasca. And a lot of people are going to, you know, South America and various other countries to partake of a sacred experience that where you ingest this combination of herbs and various other substances, and it takes you on a mystical journey. It's said to be quite powerful. So lots of people are experiencing that, but it's not necessary to do that to investigate or to become a part of the shamanistic journey.
No, I frankly would not recommend that. I mean, it might be right for some people, but, you know, given my experience with the psychedelics in the 60s, it's not the same thing. I had a debate with somebody about this, but he was off on this ayahuasca trip, and it just sounded like Tim Leary all over again to me, you know. But the indigenous people, they don't use it recreationally.
No.
So that's the distinction.
Absolutely right.
They take it, and it essentially opens a path.
Yeah.
And then you don't really have to take it anymore because the path has been blazed.
Yeah, yeah.
But for me, the drumming, the shamanic drumming, is what works. And what happens is you drum at a beat of, say, 5 to 7 beats a minute, and your brain calibrates to that, and you start getting into a theta brainwave state, which is a light trance state, and that's how you're able to access the spiritual realms.
There are a lot of people that are into drumming these days. And do you make your own drums, or...?
I do not. I bought one, actually. It kind of called to me. I was at a retreat in Omega in upstate New York, and this drum was, like, calling to me. I write about this in the book, and there's a picture of it on my website. You can take a look at it, but it was like I almost had no choice but to buy this drum. You know?
It belonged to you. It was predestined.
Yeah.
Interesting. Let's see. Oh, yeah, this is a question that comes up in your book, and this is something that I definitely believe in, and many people talk about, although we're not consciously aware of it, but you bring up the concept that is that our soul family incarnates in many different roles, which change in each lifetime, and you touched a little bit about that in terms of your uncle, but didn't you have other experiences where maybe your mother was your sister and your brother was your aunt or something?
I think I wrote about that theoretically, Lance.
Oh, okay.
With the experience with Buster was really the only experience that I'm concretely aware of.
Okay.
But my understanding about reincarnation is that you do incarnate within soul groups, and sometimes you interact with other soul groups, and you each play different roles, you know.
Yeah.
There was a movie a long time ago called The Reincarnation of Peter Proud. I think I saw it maybe in 1975, and I wasn't into any of this stuff then, but it freaked me out because his husband dies, and he comes back and essentially marries his daughter, and there's this whole incestual kind of Hollywood treatment of it, which is kind of strange and unfortunate. But the widow gets wind of the fact that he is reincarnated and flips out, you know. But I haven't seen that movie on recently, but it's a pretty interesting one to watch.
Now, what does your family think of all of these discoveries you're making? Are they with you, or are they
Well, it depends which member you talk to, man, you know. My mother is very psychic and has tons of experiences, so I think if this stuff is inherited, I'm getting it from her.
Okay.
My brother Barney is not into it. You know, he's more of a macho kind of guy, but he has had experiences, and when he lets his guard down, he lets me know about them.
Right.
And we kind of share, and then he goes back to being the macho guy, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
My brother Jerry is like, that's interesting. Can we talk about the Mets and the Yankees? You know?
Oh, jeez. Oh, golly. Well, you know, I had relatives on my father's side who... My grandmother used to get involved with little seances, and they'd do table tappings, and they'd raise tables.
Wow.
So that was on my dad's side. And then my mother's side, she was an empath and a healer, and she could heal people with her hands. And, of course, she was also an alcoholic, so she had difficulty maintaining focus sometimes, But the ability was there, so I got a little bit of something from each of them, I think. You mentioned something, too, in the book, that it's really important to demonstrate love and caring with our family and relationships on this side before they depart. Why did you say that?
I missed the last phrase.
To demonstrate our love and caring for others, especially our relations. On this side of the veil before they die.
Okay, I think, you know, this whole planet is about love, as, you know, you've written about on your website, I've noticed, and it's hard to think of that because fear is just so powerful.
Yeah, yeah.
It gets in the way, and I think, you know, when you're saying about overcoming fear, I think if we overcome the fear, we can get more into love, which is what we're trying to do here. And so, but I think what I said that perhaps you're testing me a little bit. You read my book, Lance. And it may be more current in your mind than mine at the moment. But
well, it's a wise thing to do in any case. I mean, because after a person passes on, you can't share your feelings with them, and so. You know, plus...
Well, let me yes. Disagree with you a little bit there, Lance.
Oh, all right.
Okay, because I think where this came up, I was at a meditation, doing a meditation segment at one of Medium Suzanne Northrup's seminars, and I saw my deceased father in the vision, and he had his back turned to me, and there was an aura of shame about him, a shame resulting from his... what I would term alcoholic partying days on Earth.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, when his drunken behavior made life a living hell for our family at times, perhaps you can, you know what I'm talking about.
I relate to that one. I had one of those, too.
Yeah, so I also saw that he was coming to grips with the boozing he had done and all of its ramifications and confronting certain things. I didn't know exactly what, but he was working on some things, so... He had this shame about him in the vision. I didn't exactly know what to do about it.
Yeah.
But a few days later, synchronistically again, I came across an old black and white snapshot of my father from his heyday during World War II. And in the photo, he's leaning disdainfully on this keep off the grass sign located on the lawn of the Naval Air Base where he was stationed. This was before he even ever met my mother.
Uh-huh.
When his half-brother was married to my mother and my father had never met, and he sent her this photo, and this is the photo that introduced him to her after Buster had passed.
Mm.
But in any event, I began feeling somehow that it was necessary to demonstrate forgiveness and love to my father, and knew that this would help him get unstuck on the other side. So it's not only on this side.
Yeah, that's
it's
right.
It's better to get it done on this side. It's a whole lot easier.
Yeah.
But it can happen on the other side, and so to actively communicate to my father that I loved him, respected him, and recognized that he was a good person despite the alcoholic demons that plagued him and our family. I took the snapshot of that photo to a studio, and this is before the internet and everything, and I had 4 9x12 blow-ups made, matted, and framed, one for my mother, one each for my 2 brothers, and one for me. And I told my family about this and how my father had come to me during Suzanne's meditation segment and needed our help and suggested that we display these blow-ups in our homes to show him, and you know, I believe as he looks into our lives from the other side, that we love him, forgive him, and honor his memory. And we all did that. And about a week later, my father came to me in a dream, and I could see that there was no longer any shame about him.
Wow.
And soon after that, in his visual appearances to my mother, he looked great and was very happy, and it validated that our efforts had paid off.
That's wonderful. You know, I've read so many stories where our resentments and our grief and our anger and so on, our lack of forgiveness for our loved ones, actually keeps them stuck. And, you know, a lot of people wonder why they can't communicate with their loved one on the other side. And part of that is because the grieving process, if it's really severe, they can't get through that.
It's in the way, exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. And so we have to reach a point where we've forgiven them, where we're clear, we're not emotionally upset, for them to actually begin to contact us, because the energy is different. And our own energies can drown it all out. And plus, we hold them in a kind of a limbo when we don't forgive them.
Forgiveness is key. On earth, from this realm to the next, that's a big one. I think fear and forgiveness are two big keys here.
Yeah. Yep. And now since your experience with your son, after you saw him, have you seen him again since then?
I don't see him, just to be clear, I didn't see him like I would see another person
right.
in the room. Now, my mother sees some DPs like that, DPs being
dead people. Yeah.
She has that, but I don't. I think it would freak me out totally. I got, you know, enough trouble dealing with what was coming down telepathically, but I get a vision of them in my mind sometimes.
Right.
Get them in dreams, and sometimes I just feel a download. It happens so fast that the information like kind of bypasses my consciousness.
Yeah.
And I just have it. It's like an idea. I got hit with an idea or something.
Yeah. That, I think a lot of people have that experience, and they don't know what it is. You know, you put it so well. As a download, kind of bypasses the left brain, which is logical and wants to figure things out, and it goes into the right side, the intuitive side.
Right.
What about other DPs? Have you had any contact with other ones?
Well, yeah. My Aunt Lena, the godmother who had passed away when I had the experience with Ryan shortly thereafter, she comes to me and tells me, basically, or suggests, what gifts to buy her daughter, my cousin, Tammy. I write about
really?
This in the book.
Oh,
and again,
cool.
It comes as a download. It's like, pow! Or I was walking down 8th Avenue once, and I just went another way, and I felt her presence around me. I turned right, and there's this basket in the window, that giant basket that you would keep old newspapers in.
Mm.
And I went in, and it was $55. $55 is 55 is a magic number for me. I write about this in the book. That's another story.
Yeah.
But I just knew, I just could feel that she was telling me this is a good gift for her. I bought it as a Christmas gift. Tammy loved it. She just loved it.
Wow.
And there have been a few other instances like that.
So it's important to follow those inner promptings and not just, you know, deny them and say, oh, that's nothing. And, you know, like most people do, they just kind of go on and don't do that.
Yeah, I think it's important, too, Lance, also to bring the mental aspect into it. I mean, it helps that I'm a little bit versed in the whole spirituality thing, and so I'm not freaked out by it, and then I could evaluate it and say, I mean, you know, I might think that's a terrible gift mentally, but if I'm getting it strong enough, the hunch, you might say, is going to overcome that.
Yeah. Now, you have an interesting story, don't you? As when you were working as an attorney, you actually won a court case, a divorce case against your wife. What happened there?
Yeah, this was against a friend's wife, actually, but some people had characterized it. What happens is in New York, well, first of all, speaking as a member of the New York Bar, let me say this. In New York, the divorce laws and the divorce court system are totally idiotic, and they often promote fighting and injustice. It's just insane. And that's how it was when the wife of a friend of mine was trying to take him to the cleaners. And it looked like the judge was going to let that happen. At the time, I was dating a spiritually minded woman who advised me to get to the courthouse early, and envision blue, white, and violet light flooding the room while asking spirit to allow me to do the best I could and to let there be the best outcome for all involved. This was her approach to spirituality. I was just starting into this. I had a lot of respect and admiration for her. She was beautiful to boot. I said, okay, let me do this. So I drive to downtown Brooklyn, and as I'm pulling into the parking garage, on the oldies radio station comes Norman Greenbaum's song, Spirit in the Sky.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it's a great song.
Yeah, so I think, this is interesting, okay. So I get to the courtroom early. I got to take an elevator to the 19th floor, which is, you know, that's the toughest part of my day, really. But I get there very early. I do that, and I get into the room. And Lance, I tell you, I could feel the room is packed with spirits. It was some sort of like show for these spirits or something. Like they had come. I don't know who they were, but they were there.
Wow.
So I do as my lady friend had suggested, and later during the trial, while I was in the process of basically destroying the wife's credibility during cross-examination, the court reporter's brand-new stenotype machine breaks. Brand-new.
Wow.
He has to run somewhere to get a new one, since we're the only ones on the calendar, the judge decides to handle the matter informally while we're waiting, like she should have done 2 years before that. I tell her what my client's position was, which was very generous, and she goes, and they turn that down? Let me talk to them. 10 minutes later, the case is settled.
Wow.
Now, you may know that spirits will often work through electronic gadgetry like phones, TVs, radios, computers.
Absolutely.
But this was the first time I ever heard of spirits impacting events by disabling a stenotype machine. Anyway, listen to this. This is a cool epilogue.
Okay.
I leave the courthouse beaming, right? Everything is worked out. I get into my car and I turn on the radio, and there was a commercial. So I switch to the classic rock station, and guess what? On the other channel comes Norman Greenbaum's song, Spirit in the Sky. I hadn't heard this song in years.
Yeah.
And there I am hearing it right before and right after that courtroom scene, which was all quite validating.
That's amazing. Well, that's how it works. You know, those things are, that synchronicity is not an accident. You know, and sometimes people, like I said, people tend to put it aside like, oh, that couldn't mean anything. But, you know, there's a certain point that you reach when there are so many synchronicities that you just simply can no longer deny that those are coming from some other realm.
Right.
You know, they're not an accident. Let's see here. What can we talk about now? I wanted to ask you something. This is out of the blue. I don't know why I'm asking you this question, but since you are in New York, were you in New York during the events of 9/11?
I knew this was coming. This is a long story. Okay.
Okay. You have.
I was a mile north of the World Trade Center when the bombs hit 9/11. When the planes hit, rather 9/11. 2001, and it was insane. I mean, it was just like unreal. But I got to tell you, a mile from that site is a world from that site. This is nothing like what the people went through over there. So I had my car in town, got people home and stuff like that, did some Good Samaritan stuff and like that. But recently, and this is why you're asking me, Lance, my company moved down to that area. And the energy, I mean, just before the last commemoration, that's just a couple of weeks ago, a couple of weeks before that, we moved down there. The energy was destroying me. I couldn't take it.
Wow.
I'm right behind that site.
Wow.
And I'm saying to my spirits, I know I can't curse on your show, let me not make that mistake, but I'll just say, what the hell are you doing? I can't be here.
Yeah.
This energy is tearing me up.
Yeah.
And what I got, again, in a download, but it had an audible effect to it also. It was, we need your energy here.
Oh, really?
So I say, well, what does that mean? And it got no answer, right? So I said, all right, let me try not to be caught up in this rat race here. You know, everybody's running around like madmen and mad women. And
yeah, yeah.
So I try to be polite and stuff. It throws everybody around me out of whack. They're not ready for someone to stop and say, you go first, you know what I mean?
Right, right.
So I got into that. Then I did a shamanic journey just this past month, second week in September. And it's 7 years now since 2001. And they're saying, you know, I don't know if it's true in other spiritual terms, but 7 years is usually a cycle. So they were saying, you know, this is going to be like focused on 9/11 and that kind of a thing. But the first journey was reconnect with your power animal. And I reconnected with my power animal, and he took me to a hell realm. This was a realm that people were stuck in. They think they're in hell. And this is all during the journey, and he says, power animal, my buck deer, says, show them how to get out. And I blast holes in the hell walls, and I set these holes free. This is all in a journey, right?
Wow.
And they get free. And then there's a second journey, find a trait that you're not familiar with about yourself. Compassion came through, and I never really considered myself a compassionate person. I didn't consider myself not compassionate. I just never considered the issue.
Yeah.
And I asked people, and I said, yeah, you're compassionate. Perfect. Okay. And the third journey was in two parts, and this is what blew me away, just the announcement of this journey. It was, if you find an opportunity, engage in some psychopomp work. Now, in shamanic terms, psychopomp work involves two things, helping people transition to the other side.
Oh, yeah.
Or if they're stuck on the other side, helping them get over to where they belong. And I had done that spontaneously in the first vision. I said, it was like they knew I was coming, you know? It was one of those nights.
Wow.
And the second journey was, see what you can do about 9/11 energy to make things better. And there I am. I had just moved down there, and I'm dealing with this energy, so I journey on that aspect. And I get quite clearly, I get, you're going to have to allow our energy to pass through you. So that was how I'm to use my energy.
Wow.
To allow the spirit's energy to pass through me, but it didn't end there.
Okay.
I'm still messed up with that energy down there.
Wow.
I'm still messed up. And I'm thinking about this, and I'm not sleeping. Then one night, a few days after that journey, I wake up obsessed, possessed, however you want to say it, to research 9/11. I go on the computer. I'm driven. I start researching. Oh, this is, I left out a part. A friend of mine told me that during the commemoration itself, there was this group of protesters saying 9/11 was an inside job. So that's kind of far out. I say, okay. But it really resonated with me. So when I'm doing the research, I just Googled, and anybody could do this, 9/11 inside job, and boom, so much stuff opens up on both sides.
Yeah, yeah.
And I get the spirits telling me, you know, to research this and let people know that they should examine the evidence. That's all I'm told to pass along. Examine the evidence. Google 9/11 inside job. Look at both sides and examine the evidence. I did, and it's frightening. Okay?
Yeah.
But I said to these spirits, the next day I was a wreck. I couldn't even work hardly.
Wow.
And I was talking to my friend Dave at work and saying, he's going, look at you. Look at you. Get at, don't do this stuff. Look what it's doing to you, because I was a disaster.
Huh.
And I'm supposed to be, you know, into tax law, and I'm thinking about all this, right?
Yeah.
And I said to my spirit, I said, listen, you're really messing me up. You gotta let me alone with this. And they backed off, and that night I slept like a solid 8 hours, like I never sleep.
Mm.
And the next day, the next morning, I'm in the shower, and this group of spirits come to me as I'm in the shower, and this is again all telepathic.
Mm.
And they come to me and they say, okay, we let you sleep, but we want you to get that message out. And I got to tell you, Lance, I'm in the shower, and for me, water is a conduit, and showers, I have experiences, you know, in the shower sometimes. It was very real. And along with them and comes John Lennon's spirit.
Ooh.
And he's saying, listen, and I've gotten him before in other contexts. I don't really write about this because this is more recent.
Okay.
And I start, again, downing my own sanity with this stuff, right?
Yeah.
But he says to me, listen, you can, you know, because I play drums as well, and he says, you can put together a band with Ralphie and Bonnie, and you can do a little jamming and do some protest songs. That'll help get the message out. Just an idea, just an idea.
Uh-huh.
I said, all right, you know, I'll consider it. So in any event, thank you for asking the question, and for your listeners, Google 9/11 inside job, see what you get, examine the evidence, see what you think.
Well, you know, it's funny because that question just came into my head, and I was trying to push it aside, and
it wouldn't let you.
It wouldn't let me. It was like you have to ask this question.
Wow.
So obviously, this is a very good reason. You know, this is how it works. It's working right now. We are experiencing on the radio how spirit works.
Absolutely.
And this
wonderful, Lance. Thank you so much.
And it works for everybody. And the story isn't over yet. It was either yesterday or the day before when I was just, you know, at random looking up YouTube videos and, you know, going on a journey to the past. And I got hooked on John Lennon and Julian Lennon and the Lennon and Yoko Ono.
Wow.
And I posted one of the John Lennon songs to my Yahoo group, which is called Awakening Cosmic Consciousness, and I posted it because it said it all there. It was like, you know, he was an awakened being, and he was here to bring a message, and he brought it, but unfortunately, his life was cut short, as are many lives cut short, you know. And on the 9/11 issue, I've done quite a bit of research on that myself, and I would agree with you, and I would encourage the listeners to do your own research and, you know,
Google, examine that evidence
and look at it, try to keep an open mind, and look at both sides of the evidence. I'm just
got to do that.
Yeah, it's very important because this is a crucial time on the planet.
Well, John Lennon, he's very active.
Is he?
Yes, he's very active with a number of people. I mean, there are so many things. I could get into it here and go on and on and on.
Well, what's he doing?
he's communicating with a number of people, it seems.
Oh, wow.
And I belong to a group, a John Lennon Spirit type group, and there are a number of people there who share their experiences. I came across somebody yesterday, somebody who said, read this book. I did some research on it with somebody who had written a review about it. He said, yeah, something happened, and he had something. Now you've had something. He's all over, and I think part of it is political. He's not only spiritual, but he's also political.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And sometimes these two things go hand in hand.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And for me, they do.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I think if you look at Jesus was not political. That's a different way to go about your life. You can just be spiritual and not get involved in the politics.
Yeah, the only thing that stands out in my mind about him being radical is the overturning of the moneylenders.
Well, that's what brought about the crucifixion, really. I mean,
well,
but that was not against the Romans. That was against his fellow Jews.
Well, yeah, and if he were alive today, it would take him many lifetimes to turn over all the tables from the greed and corruption that's going on.
I know. I'm still astounded if I walk into St. Patrick's Cathedral that they're selling all stuff back there. It's like, didn't you read that gospel, you know?
Yeah, it's amazing. And we've just kind of been brought up from childhood to just accept all this this greed and corruption as real. And now, you know, the government has bailed out the banksters. That
don't get me started on that one.
You know, that could be a several hour show. But you know, everything is spun on the mainstream media. You do not hear the truth.
That's exactly right. You got to get into the alternative media, especially when it comes to matters of government.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that alone, the bailout and going back to the Federal Reserve, and that takes you back into 1929 and the Great Depression and how it was created artificially to, you know, rob the country, and they're doing it again.
It seems that way. It's unfortunate, but it certainly seems that way.
Yeah, so I don't want to get up on my soapbox because I'll tell you, well, you won't be able to get me off. So, now, there was something else this is fun stuff now. Here, you say in your books that spirits love to talk with us through magic numbers and letters. How does that work? And talk about that a little bit.
Okay, this is something I really kind of discovered on my own. But then when I put it out there, again, when you start talking about
right,
other people have their own stories. And I included a number of those stories in the book, Into the Mystic. And you can read about them there. But essentially, what we are talking about, I would say, is spirit actively communicating with you some way, for example, through a license plate. As absurd as it may sound, a license plate comes into your view with a series of letters and or numbers that have a special meaning for you personally.
Oh, yeah.
Somehow, and forget about how, I have no idea how, spirits are able to get these messages across to us. So, for example, if I'm mulling over an idea on how to solve a problem or situation and a license plate comes into view with a 55 or a 555, which happen to be magic numbers for me, that's another story about how that came to be. I can get into that if you like. But I will take that as a good sign that my idea will work. It's not conclusive, and it needs to be tested, and you got to think about it. But when that happens, I'll file the idea away in the back of my brain as a potential solution if and when that situation presents itself. And things somehow, when I do this, have a way of working out. And sometimes it can be like on-the-spot guidance. This is a little bit trite, perhaps, but I'll give you this as an example. One morning I was part of the rush hour heading into Manhattan along Brooklyn's Ocean Parkway. I was driving into work. It's always a treat, madness. So some guy in a 4x4 kept swerving in and out, cutting me off two or three times and making no real progress, just very impatient. So finally I just got fed up, you know, and I'm just going to go pull alongside this guy and yell at him. I get caught up in this road rage. I'm not a perfect spirit, that's for sure.
Oh, no, I don't know any that are. I know I'm not.
All right, so I'm pulling up along this guy to sound him, and I noticed that his license plate included this sequence of numbers, 4-555. So, boom, download, right?
Right.
I associate myself with the numbers 555. The 4 became that it was for me, and it simply hit me that this driver was there for me to test my patience, which is something I'm always trying to work on. To me, it was my spirit's way of telling me that my patience was being tested by this guy. It just downloaded to me that way, essentially. It's like a wake-up call.
Wow.
And the practical effect of this was that I recognized it. I relaxed into being defensive driver of the year, and I let the guy motor on out of my existence without any need for confrontation.
That's a great story. I love that one.
Thank you, thank you.
You know, and the other thing is, sometimes when we don't realize how we're altering circumstances by not entering into, you know, those angry situations.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, we don't know what would have happened if, you know, if you'd gotten angry, you might have gotten into an accident, and who knows what else could happen.
Right, or maybe just made him angry, and he takes it out on his coworker, and it sets off a whole...
It starts a domino effect. You know,
exactly, yeah.
Or the butterfly effect, I guess, is another way to say that.
The butterfly effect? I'm not familiar with that, Lance.
Well, it's... I'll just paraphrase it. It's where the theory that if you step on a butterfly here in California, say, or in New York, that somewhere in Bolivia there's a volcano that goes off.
Oh, okay.
Just the interrelatedness of everything, that we just don't realize how some delicate little thing, event, as simple as that, might create some kind of reverberations through time that will have major repercussions.
Okay.
So, that's that. Now, I had a question for you, and it just went out of my mind. Oh, well, that's all right. I'm out of my mind anyway.
Welcome to the club, man.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. In your spiritual research, so this is another one that's kind of off the wall, because you are interested in shamanism, and I know that there's Mayans and others. Do you do any research on the theory about 2012 being a significant date, or does that...
I did. It really did move me for a while, and I write a little bit about this in the book. There was this Mayan shaman. I went to Omega. There was a gathering of shamans from different parts of the earth, including South America, obviously, and it was a Mayan shaman. I asked her this directly because I want to know what's going to happen in 2012. And she said, essentially, there's a shift, and the shift has already begun. And come 2012, some people are going to be able to adapt to this shift, and some people are not. I think those of us in the spiritual community are going to be able to adapt to it. I don't know what lies ahead. I fear, with all of the earth changes and all the wars and the food shortages and all this stuff, I fear that our future may be an ancient future. I know that a lot of visionaries are having that very experience, but they're 5,000 years out. I don't know when this is going to happen, but there is something, I think, up to the whole thing about the Mayan calendar ending. I think it's December 21st, 2012. They were like masters at creating calendars and with incredible accuracy, and they just stopped making them at that point.
Yeah.
It would seem to indicate to me that something dramatic is going to happen, but I don't really know, Lance, but it is a fascinating subject.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, I don't know much more than you do, other than what I can find out. I do know that the Mayans do exist today, and there's this is interesting. I found out that one of the Mayan elders, there are something like 400 tribes of Mayans existing around the planet, and each tribe has its own head honcho or shaman who they elect. And then all of those in turn elect the group leader for all of them. And apparently, I think his name is Don Alejandro. I'm not sure about that, but he lives in South America, I think Bolivia. And the president of that country elected him to the cabinet and is one of his students as a Mayan, and they have great respect for this guy. So the other thing that I found out was that the Mayans say that a lot of the stuff that's been written about their culture is not accurate. So they are writing their own book to correct the misconceptions about, you know, the Mayan people, and they are fully aware of what's coming. And so they're writing this book as the source of the Mayan information about what really is happening and what's coming. So that might be something to watch out for.
Yeah, fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see. Where do we want to go from here? Well, what do you want to talk about? Is there anything that you...
You really hit the 9/11 thing. That was something I was hoping would come up.
Yeah.
And that's a big thing for me, so I've kind of gotten that. Wherever you want to go with this, you know, it's up to you. I think maybe some people who aren't so keyed into this stuff might say, well, how's this going to help me, like, in everyday life if I become spiritual? So I could give that a whirl if you like.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, so sometimes people will say to me, well, how have spirits helped you, like, in everyday matters? And
well,
they have helped me, like finding an apartment, picking out gifts I've mentioned before, buying a new car, overcoming fears is very practical. So often it's by giving me a nudge in one direction or another, or by providing validating signs. For example, when I was looking for an apartment, a real nice one became available in the same building where my mother lives.
Uh-huh.
And being at that time an aspiring, swinging, recently divorced bachelor type, I knew that living in the same building with my mother could wreak havoc with the image I was trying
Not
to create. Right? So I asked for guidance and simply got that my spirit helpers thought it would be a good thing.
Oh.
And really, the decision was so close for me on a practical level. My brothers were divided on it. My friends were divided on it.
Huh.
I went with that spiritual advice as a determining factor, and in fact, I broke one lease to take the new apartment, and things did indeed, knock wood, work out okay. Not that there weren't a few bumps in the road. I write about this in the book, actually, but overall, so far, so good. I think I mentioned picking out gifts, especially for my cousin Tammy. I sense my deceased godmother, her mother, guiding me to pick out particular gifts. It's not just one or two. It's been like 3, 4, 5 over the course of like 7, 8 years. And 3 years ago, when I was buying a new car, I was hung up over the fact this was during my more swinging bachelor-type persona. I leased a BMW, which for a guy supposedly into spirituality, this was a heavy material investment.
Right.
And I got a lot of signs along the way indicating it was okay to splurge in that one instance. And when I picked the car up, the BMW keyring medallion had a bunch of consecutive fives in the phone number. And to me, like I mentioned before, since five is my magic number, and usually means something very positive when it pops up like that, it was a validating sign that it was okay to get the BMW and try to enjoy it. And I did enjoy it. When the lease ran out, though, I did opt for a Prius. But the BMW was a good run, and spirits helped me get that car. And again, with the fears, and that's a big one. I could go on all day, but what I found out, bottom line, is that when I am confronting my fears, which again, often for me involves facing down claustrophobic situations and a seemingly never-ending series of battles, my spirits are often there with me, encouraging me to take one approach or another, and that has helped me immensely in overcoming fear.
Wonderful. Well, I'm glad we could also bring this back to the practical side before we sign off. We're just out of time.
Okay, great.
Would you please make sure that you give everybody your website address where they can find your book and your material and do more research and talk to you?
Sure, I would love to do that, Lance. It's journeyintothemystic.com. Journeyintothemystic.com.
Wonderful. And your book name is called Into the Mystic.
So. Into the Mystic from the Streets of Brooklyn.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, Dennis, thank you so much for being on the show. It was a terrific show, and I really love talking to you.
Great to be here, Lance. Thanks so much.
All righty.
Take care.
Good luck to you. Okay. Good night.
Good night.